Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Portia Hampton Flowers. I represent the appellant, City of St. Paul. This case is about a decision that was made 17 years ago. In 2002, after retiring from the City of St. Paul, Julie Tosse applied for continuing health insurance benefits under Minnesota Statute 299A.465 through the Public Safety Officer Benefits Program. In 2002, the city notified Ms. Tosse that the Department of Public Safety determined that Tosse was not eligible for the program.
But Ms. Hampton Flowers, what the department actually did, wasn't it? They said the city wasn't entitled to reimbursement, but the statute still holds the city as the primary person. The employer is who pays those benefits. And didn't hear the employer seek reimbursement through the state?
Actually, Your Honor, the Department of Public Safety did state that Ms. Tosse was not eligible for the program. The City of St. Paul was a pass-through for Ms. Tosse's application. In 2002, Ms. Tosse submitted her application to the City of St. Paul, and the City of St. Paul passed Ms. Tosse's application on to the Department of Public Safety along with additional information. And upon receipt of that information, the department determined that Ms. Tosse was not eligible for the program.
I agree with you. I'm just looking at the letter here, and it says the City of St. Paul is requesting reimbursement for the cost of compliance with 299A, et cetera. So I'm just wondering if there's not a difference between them being reversed or being reimbursed and still having to pay the benefit under the statute.
At the time in 2002, the process was sort of a singular process. The Department of Public Safety reviewed applications or requests, I believe it was once a year. And so the City of St. Paul's process, the process that it followed in accordance with the Department of Public Safety's procedures was the request is made. At that point, if the court is looking at the date that that application was submitted through St. Paul to the DPS, no payment had been made. So if the court even looks at those documents, there's no specific amount indicated. So there had not been a determination made that Ms. Tosse was eligible for the program.
Until 2014, when the City of St. Paul said she was a firefighter injured in the line of duty.
Actually, Your Honor, I would disagree. The determination was made in 2002. In 2002, when DPS said Ms. Tosse was not eligible, the City of St. Paul adopted that determination, informed Ms. Tosse that she was not eligible for the program, and did not pay the benefits that she had requested.
So is there, and I couldn't find anything in the record specifically from St. Paul to Ms. Tosse saying, we will not pay the benefits under 299A. Is there something in the record where they've directly communicated to her other than passing on to her the letter from March 15th, 2002 from the Department of Public Safety?
There is no document which says what the court has asked.
Okay.
It is simply that information and the fact that the city did not pay the benefit. Okay. And I think it's important to note that the benefit that Ms. Tosse requested in 2002 was an increase, which would have included not only health insurance coverage for herself, but health insurance coverage for her dependents. And so to the extent that there is a question, well, how would she have known, which is what Ms. Tosse has argued, is if you're requesting an increase to cover not only yourself, but your dependents, the absence of that payment would be noticeable. And also the fact that in this case, and going back to the argument here or the legal issue, the statute of limitations bars Ms. Tosse's claim because this was a claim based upon a liability created by statute. Minnesota Statute 299A.465 is the statute that says the City of St. Paul or a municipal employer is obligated to make these payments under certain circumstances. And because the city did not make the payment in 2002, when requested, there was a six-year statute of limitations that applied, which required Ms. Tosse to submit her lawsuit against the City of St. Paul or the DPS or whoever she believed was responsible for denying her application that had to be submitted by 2008. In this case, when the city informed Ms. Tosi that she would not be eligible for the program and the city refused to pay those benefits, there was a 12-year period, excuse me, a 14-year period where nothing happened.
All right, so, and I understand your argument. Why in the, as a matter of law, did the city then start providing these benefits in 2015?
Your Honor, there is no record on that issue. That was not...
But what's the legal... Is there any legal significance to that? I mean...
No, Your Honor. The city's decision to provide those benefits in 2015, which we did not build a record on, could have been based upon a new policy that the city had under the current administration. It could have been based upon a misreading or a misinterpretation of the legal requirements of 299A.
But if so, is it your position then that payments that have been made since 2015, and I know there was some error in terms of single versus dependent coverage, is that are those just voluntary payments? And the reason I ask is that one of the arguments advanced here is that from 2015 on, there should be that the reimbursement should be on a single basis, not family dependent coverage basis. But I'm not asking this question very well. When I look at your request for relief, I see you asking for reversal and asking the court to rule that the statute of limitations bars Ms. Tosi's claims in their entirety.
Yes.
And the alternative is that if we have to pay these claims, it should be the single coverage versus the family coverage. That's your alternative argument?
Only because the city, for whatever reason we didn't build a record on, made a decision in 2015 okay. that they gave her that coverage. And so we're not saying that we're trying to undo that 2015 decision. We're saying if there was ever anything that the court could look at is, all right, we will accept our action in 2015 to give her the single active employee rate moving forward. We're not saying that we're not required to pay that because that was a decision that we made in 2015.
But you would then ask this court if we were to agree with you, and that's just for the sake of this question, not because we've made any decision on that, but if we agreed with you the statute of limitations bars the claims going back to 2002, you would expect an opinion to say that for the payments the city is making from 2015 forward, they should just be based on individual.
Yes, and quite frankly, I don't think the court needs to address that because that part isn't... It really isn't being challenged. I don't think Ms. Tosi is saying that she doesn't want those additional payments that began in 2015. I think Ms. Tosi's claim is I should have been paid for the past now 16 years for benefits for myself and my dependents.
I had one question, Ms. Hampton Flowers. So, getting back to Judge Flory's question about the letter of March 15, 2002, so if the Department of Public Safety had said, Ms. Tosi is eligible, is that it then for St. Paul? Do you just automatically have to pay then, or do you have to file a lawsuit, or do you get to appeal that decision? How does that work?
In 2002.
In 2002.
In 2002, the process was much different than... I think it is today, and certainly how it's evolved over the years. The statute has changed a number of times. In 2002, the process was DPS was the final decision maker, and the city of St. Paul would have accepted and there's no procedural appeal process for the city of St. Paul to disagree with the DPS decision.
And was that based on both the statute and the collective bargaining agreement? Or mostly the statute, or maybe
the statute is silent, and there were no procedures that existed at DPS for an appeal.
Okay.
So essentially, there was nothing that governed what would happen if you disagreed.
And why would a city? Because they're getting reimbursed by DPS.
Correct. And even though it was not 100% reimbursement, that was the reason that it was flowed through. Through the city to DPS the way it was.
Do I understand you to say, though, that if Ms. Tosi was otherwise eligible for these benefits, then the city would have to pay them, and maybe it would be offset by reimbursement, but if that got denied by the DPS, the city would have still been on the hook for the full amount.
At the time in 2002, the procedure was whether there was any statutory basis for it or not. The procedure was DPS made the decision, and the municipality, at least the city of St. Paul, adopted DPS's decision. There's no other language in the statute that would tell what should or should not happen.
And the application, in fact, that Ms. Tosi submitted on February 20th, 2002, you know, identifies the benefits being sought as these particularly statutory benefits, is directed to the Department of Public Safety, and lists that the city, St. Paul, is the employer requesting reimbursement, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And it just so happened at the time it was a singular process.
So she knew that this was how it was going to work when she submitted this application, because that's what it says.
Yes. Ms. Tosi provided the information to the city. The city provided the information to the Department of Public Safety.
And this is her signature on the addendum, page 74, on... I mean, this would have been submitted by the city along with its information verifying the position and things like that.
It is my belief that that is Ms. Tosi's signature.
Is there any explanation in the record then? If I'm looking at the claim form filed by Ms. Tosi on 216.02, she identifies her job title as firefighter. St. Paul represents to DPS that she's a dispatcher, which is, that disqualifies her for the program. That seems to be a significant difference. If all this was you're passing this on to the DPS to consider, and then a significant qualifier for the program is you got to be a firefighter, but then contrary to what Ms. Tosi submits, St. Paul represents she's a dispatcher, which disqualifies her. What are we to make of that?
Your Honor, the what I think needs to be clarified is the questions that were being asked, possibly in 2002, which you know the record is a little shaky on because of the age of the claim,
of course,
and the record that was created during the litigation. There was a question as to whether the city was answering what was her job title at the date of retirement versus what was her job title at the date of injury. And I think it's important for the court to note that when Ms. Tosi left the firefighter trainee academy, that was November 21st, she was returned to her prior title, which was fire dispatcher. And she sat in that position, the fire dispatcher position, for a couple of weeks before she went on an extended leave, receiving sick leave and vacation pay as a fire dispatcher. And when she retired from the city of St. Paul, her title, whether she returned to work and did the job of a fire dispatcher after she left the academy, that was her title because she bounced back when she was not successful at the fire academy.
Was that an administrative function, or did she actually come to work and sit as a dispatcher, or did St. Paul just designate her to her previous position once she was let go from the academy?
That was what was required under the collective bargaining agreement. She was not terminated as a city employee. She didn't pass probation, so to speak, as a firefighter, so she reverted back to her prior title, and it just so happened Ms. Tosi didn't show up at work the next day, but she received benefits, vacation and sick leave, as a dispatcher prior to her retirement. Ms. Tosi alleges that she is entitled to forego, or is the six-year statute of limitations doesn't apply because there was a continuing injury. There is no continuing injury here. There was one act, one action by the city of St. Paul, one decision. That was in 2002. And from 2002 until Ms. Tosi, or until the city changed its mind in 2015, which we've already addressed, but there was no continuing act by the city, so there was no continuing violation. This is not like a discrimination claim where you have continuing violations that...
But it's continuing injury, isn't it?
It's a continuing effect of one injury, that one injury occurring in 2002. I see that my time is up, and I will return for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hampton Flowers. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Thank you. My name is Sandra Kenzie. May it please the court and counsel. I'm representing the respondent, Julie Tosse. I'd like to just go back to a couple questions first and maybe cover, answer some of these questions. The court noted at ad 74, the claim form that Ms. Tosse signed, and I think Justice Bjorkman, you asked if it was Ms. Tosse's signature. I'm not sure if I have the right person, but anyway, that is her signature. But I would just like to point out, you said, well, this would make her know that she was submitting a claim to the Minnesota Department of Public Service for public safety, rather, for her benefit. Well, I disagree. I mean, on the very top of this claim form, ad 74, it says, claim form for reimbursement of employer's costs. Ms. Tosse went to her human resources person. They provided her all these forms, said, fill them out. She filled them out and did whatever they told
right.
her to
and
do.
And she said she was a firefighter, and she identified her training chief. And, I mean, so it was clear that the Department of Public Safety did get information about what she was actually doing, not that she was a fire dispatcher, but that she had been in this training position. And the letter from March 15th says not only does the city, you don't get reimbursement, but, in fact, Ms. Tosse is not eligible for this program. Why isn't that, in the context of how her application was submitted, why isn't that sufficient to give her notice that she was not going to get the benefits under this statute?
Because it says that the language of the letter says the Department of Public Safety has reviewed and received the application from the City of St. Paul. The City of St. Paul is requesting reimbursement for the cost of compliance. And then it says, after careful review of this claim, we find the fire dispatcher, Julie, is not eligible for our program.
She doesn't
care if the city gets reimbursed or not. That's not
She
her.
Does care if she's eligible for the program. I mean, her application is submitted to get benefits under a program, and she's told in March of 2002 she's not eligible for that statutory program.
Well, the Minnesota Department of Public Safety didn't have statutory authority.
Well, that may be the case. I'm talking about the statute of limitations issue. She knew that she wasn't going to get these benefits. Didn't she?
No, I don't think she did. So she testified that she didn't know that she wasn't getting the benefit. The human resources person for the city as well as Health Partners both testified that in 2002 there wasn't any difference really in the premium between people getting coverage under the line of duty and people getting it under the collective
bargaining. So the damage is occasioned by the failure to comply with the statute or the wrongful act, if you will, didn't manifest themselves till later.
Correct, and it was quite a bit later when the insurance rates started to climb, and then the city never totally fully reimbursed or paid the entire premium. There is still, even when she receives now coverage for herself and her dependents under the statute, she still has a significant monthly premium that she has to pay. It's just much less than it would have been had she, not qualified.
Did anyone argue in the district court that there was a fact issue as to whether your client received the March 15th, 2002 letter and whether that provided notice of ineligibility for the program?
We admitted that she received the letter. In fact, when she learned from firefighters in 2012 that were in her similar situation and were disabled, that they were receiving, paying significantly less benefit or premiums, she went and dug through her files, and this was the only thing she found that even related to the issue. And so she did have the letter. What we what was disputed was the effect of the letter, whether it gave her sufficient notice, and whether or not, you know, she understood that she wasn't receiving the benefit, because she thought at all times that she was receiving the benefit.
Even though it told her she was ineligible.
Well, it told the city that she was ineligible for them to reimburse the city.
Okay, that's your argument.
That's my argument, yeah.
And as
a layperson, you know, I don't think she understood one way or another what they were doing. She just did whatever the city told her to do, and she thought she filled out all the paperwork she was supposed to fill out, and she'd be getting her benefits. And I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, I know. So I understand your argument is that that no cause of action accrued, if you will, until she learned in 2012 for the first time that she wasn't getting benefits out of this statutory program.
Yes, because I think that the Minnesota Department of Public Safety didn't have statutory authority to make a determination.
That goes to the merits of whether the denial was appropriate, not whether she had noticed that it had been denied. As I review it, the district court was not persuaded that there'd been no notice in 2002, but the district court was persuaded that the statute of limitations, the 6 years, function to limit the number of years back from when the litigation was commenced in 2016. What's the strongest legal support for the district court's decision that that's how the statute of limitations operates in this case?
Well, I think you have the continuing my notice of review is that actually she should be getting damages back to 2002 based on the continuing violation document or doctrine and the continuing injury she's suffered here. I mean, the city was mandated to pay this insurance to its disabled firefighter, and it failed to do so without giving her any notice of that. And my strongest argument to support the district court's six-year look-back period is the case that I cited in my brief that provided that it was an older case. Here, let me quick find it for you. The Cohn versus City of Minneapolis case, I think, says that it should go all the way back. The Forsyth versus City of South St. Paul, which is a 1926 case, 255 Northwest 816, the Minnesota Supreme Court stated, when you have continuing injuries, it's well established in this state that damages may be recovered within the six-year period prior to the commencement of the suit. That's at page 818 of that case. And that's, I think, the district court didn't cite that case, but in my attempts to try to figure out how she came up with her analysis, that's the case I found, and it says it's well established in the state. So I think there is then precedential support for her position, and at a minimum, it should be affirmed. I think that the case ought to be reversed to and sent back to the district court on the continuing violation doctrine to determine what the damages are from 2002 till the time that the city started paying the benefit. And I think that under the...
I guess on the continuing violation, Ms. Kenzie, do you agree that the record is that in 2002, you know, the Department of Public Safety makes the call?
I do not agree with that at all.
Okay, what statutes, what do you rely on that it doesn't?
I rely on the fact that the city produced absolutely, they say that that was the procedure. They produced absolutely no written document to suggest that there was a procedure. I did a rule, I think it's 30B6 deposition, where I said to the city, you appoint the person most knowledgeable to provide testimony on evidence on this issue, and they provided somebody who provided absolutely no information about any procedure in place in 2002 or otherwise. There's no statute that gives the Minnesota Department of Public Safety the authority to make these decisions in 2002. In 2005, 299A.465 was amended, and at that time, the Department of Public Safety was given the authority to make the determination, and that remained in effect until July 1st of 2008, and then that was repealed. So the Minnesota Department of Public Safety didn't have the authority to make the determination. There's nothing in the record that shows that it did, other than the unsupported affidavit of Mr. Ron Guilfoyle, who said, well, that's what we did. We submitted it to the Department of Public Safety.
What legal difference, what difference does that make to the legal arguments that we need to address? Namely, is she eligible or not? Does the statute of limitations bar it or not?
Well, I think the city made the determination that she was eligible. And then it submitted its claim for reimbursement to the Department of Public Safety, because you wouldn't submit a claim for reimbursement unless you determined that she was eligible. So I think the city determined she was eligible, and then
unless you were relying on the Department of Public Safety to determine eligibility, in which case you would submit it to the Department of Public Safety as they did, and then it's their call, and whatever they say, we do.
Well, I think if you were going to submit it to the Department of Public Safety as an initial claim, you wouldn't submit it on paperwork that's called claim for reimbursement. You would submit it on something that would identify that this is an initial claim for this department to take under consideration and determine if she's eligible. In this case, the city's claim for reimbursement was submitted on March, I believe it was 12th or 13th of 2002, and the letter in response from the Department of Public Safety was 2 days later. They came back and said, oh, she doesn't qualify for our program.
Well, she had submitted her initial application, which was addressed to the Minnesota Department of Public Safety and identifies, again, the city as the employer requesting reimbursement. But, I mean, it was her application. She was the claimant. She submitted, and then, so that was February 20th. And then I see employment verification forms, which the city must have then submitted, in March 11th. But, I mean, DPS did have your client's application, in February.
Are you talking about Ad 74?
Yeah, and 75, 76. I mean, those are the documents your client signed.
Right.
And submitted.
Well, Ad 75 is called Public Safety Officers Benefit Fund.
Claim form.
It doesn't indicate at all that that's a Minnesota Department of Public Safety document. It's received on February 20th by Risk Management, which the record reflects is the city, not the Department of Public Safety.
Your position is that there's a question as to whether pages 74 through 77 were submitted by your client to DPS?
Oh, I do not. She didn't. My understanding of the record and my client's testimony is she didn't submit anything to the DPS. She met with the city of St. Paul.
Okay,
filled
yes,
out
they
forms.
Were the pass-through. But
yeah.
This stuff she filled out the same day, didn't she?
She did,
yeah.
Okay. Yes.
And it was submitted together to whoever.
Well, she thought she submitted to the city. That's who she met with. She didn't know what the city did with it after, they received the claim forms.
Even though it's addressed to the Minnesota Department of Public Safety.
Yeah. I don't...
Okay.
I don't know that she specifically addressed that. I don't want to say something that's okay. Not on the record.
Right.
But I think that the record was pretty clear that she just did whatever the city told her to do and, wasn't probably making any distinction between anything at the time. I mean, at the time, she's suffering from, a full-blown major depressive disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder from her relationship with the city. And so I don't think she was really in any mental position to be arguing with the city, about what claim form she should be filling out. She just did whatever they said.
Yeah, I'm looking at Subdivision 4 of Minnesota Statute 299A.465, that was applicable in the year 2000. And Subdivision 4 says, I don't know if this lends an answer to what we've been talking about, but it says, a public employer subject to this section may annually apply to the Commissioner of Public Safety for reimbursement of its costs of complying with this section. The commissioner shall provide reimbursement to the public employer out of the public safety officer's benefit account. I don't know that people have addressed that, but it seems to me to somewhat address the process here that has been talked about. Were you familiar with that subdivision?
Yes, I am. I mean, and that's part of my argument is that's a, and it's a may. It's a, not a mandatory thing. The public employer can may submit for reimbursement. Doesn't have to. The applicable subdivision here that I think binds the city and mandates payment on behalf of its disabled firefighter, Ms. Tossie, is Subdivision 1. And that's a mandatory provision. It applies when she's, you know, I mean, it's, she clearly meets the subdivision statute provisions. The court found that, and the court was appropriate to find that because the record supports that. And the court found that the city provided no evidence to suggest that she didn't meet these provisions. See, I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kenzie. Ms. Hampton Flowers, you'll have the last word.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address some of the discussion that just occurred with opposing counsel here. Even if Ms. Tossie did not know that she wasn't receiving the benefit that she applied for in 2002, it does not toll the statute of limitations. Ignorance does not toll the statute of limitations. The cause of action accrued when the benefits were denied in 2002. With regard to the best legal basis for the district court's reading of the statute of limitations, there is no legal basis for the district court's reading of the statute of limitations to or decision that the statute of limitations applies, which in the normal course of the statute of limitations, that would mean it bars a claim, and then to say that you can only recover a certain amount of damage. The claim that the Ms. Tossie submitted is based upon her 2002 application and the denial of the benefits requested in that application.
When did she start experiencing damage as a result of what you claim is the violation that occurred on, I guess, March 19th, 2002?
I would say April of 2002, because she would have in the next month gotten the benefit that she demanded. But she didn't. So her first damage was when that denial occurred and she no longer, or she didn't receive the benefit when she was supposed to receive it. It's not a continuing violation. I also want to point out this counsel alleged that Ms.
Tossie never got the benefit.
Pardon me?
Because she never got the benefit.
Correct. She never got any benefit. And really what just happened was her alleged damage just increased. Ms. Tossie's counsel has told the court that she was a layperson and she didn't know or understand the language of what was being shared with her. I would point out to the court that in 2004, as Ms. Kinsey has indicated, Ms. Tossie was involved in litigation with the city of St. Paul. She sued the city of St. Paul as a result of her inability to succeed in the firefighter training academy. The city of St. Paul and Ms. Tossie settled that lawsuit. In the settlement agreement, Ms. Tossie specifically reserved her rights with regard to disability benefits in the 2004 settlement agreement. So Ms. Tossie was had the advice of counsel at that point.
It's in the record.
Yes, Your Honor, it is. Unfortunately, I don't have the page to point to, but this was discussed and submitted to the district court that Ms. Tossie reserved the right to challenge her disability benefits. And that is further evidence of the fact that she knew she was not getting what she had demanded. And
well, she also says she's not, she's not giving up claims to work under the work comp law or pension provisions. I mean, isn't that just sort of a boilerplate provision of a settlement agreement that says this is only about our disability or our discrimination case?
No, I give meaning to it, Your Honor.
So your argument is, at the very least, she should have done something in 2004 to preserve her, to act on her rights.
No. Well, she had until 2008 because the statute of limitations was 6 years. But in 2004, she was aware of the fact that there were rights potentially out there that she could act upon. I'd also point out that in 2012, when Ms. Tosse started having conversations about her benefits, she addressed those to the Department of Public Safety, and she asked the Department of Public Safety to reconsider her application. Those are the words that she submitted in her March 2012 letter to the Department of Public Safety. And there is no document in the file that, this is going on to another point, there's no document in the file that shows, as Ms. Kinsey has argued, that the city of St. Paul ever agreed or approved Ms. Tosse's claim for continued benefits under 299A.
I was going to ask, let's say there's no statute of limitations issue, that the city didn't start, for whatever reason, paying benefits in 2015. Does she win? I mean, especially after the Conaway decision, which basically took care of DPS's suggestion that a mental health issue can't be a disabling injury. I mean, does she win under 299A465 on the statute on its terms as it existed in 2000?
No, Your Honor. One, because
what's your argument? What's the strongest argument in that?
The strongest argument I can tell you for why Conaway doesn't apply. First of all, the parties in that case all agreed that the plaintiff had PTSD as a result of her job duties. In this case, we've never had that sort of concession or stipulation. I'd also point out that 299A.465, one of the subdivisions, subdivision 5C, defines firefighter. And it defines firefighter by saying, look at Minnesota Statute 424.03. And when you go to 424.03, it specifically says that a firefighter, for purposes of benefits under 299A, is a person that is serving in active duty on with a designated fire company and engaged in the hazards of firefighting.
And so your position is during her training, she wasn't doing that?
Correct, Your Honor.
But didn't they list her as a firefighter, though, and pay her as a firefighter when she was in the training academy?
There is a difference, Your Honor, between a firefighter job title and job description with the city of St. Paul and the statutory definition of a firefighter for purposes of 299A benefits. Not every firefighter in the city of St. Paul under that job title is engaged in the hazards of firefighting with an active fire company. And that's why it's really important that we look at all criteria under 299A.465 when we're determining whether or not she's eligible for the benefits. Para pension is not enough. That is a prerequisite, but then you have to go to the other subdivisions. And I see that I'm out of time. With that, I would ask that the court reverse the district court's determination with regard to the statute of limitations and dismiss Ms. Tosse's complaint in its entirety.
Thank you, Ms. Hampton Flowers. Thank you, Ms. Kinsey. The matter is submitted.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That being our last case for oral argument, we are adjourned.